It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is overcast, still quite foggy here on Burrow Hill. At the airport, they are showing wind speeds of 12 miles per hour from the east, and they are up to 7 miles of visibility, they claim. Look for rain for the rest of the day and rain tomorrow, too. Rain is likely through, let's say Sunday or so. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is completely membered up. A fire causes an evacuation of a small cruise ship in Glacier Bay National Park. And since Alaska's fire season is slow getting going, we're sending firefighters to Canada, where theirs has been a little speedier. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Winter Johnston. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency is warning that the recent collapse of a dam in southern Ukraine could have severe consequences for a nearby nuclear power plant. NPR's Jeff Brumfield reports the water from the dam's reservoir is essential to keeping the critical systems working.
The Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant uses water from the reservoir to cool its reactors and the emergency generators used to keep other systems running. Following the collapse of the Kakhovka Dam, the reservoir is now in the process of draining. Within days, it appears the water level may be too low for the nuclear plant to use it. The head of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, warns that if the plant loses all access to water, fuel inside the reactors could start to melt down.
However, our current assessment is that there is no immediate risk to the safety of the plant.
Grossi says a cooling pond at the plant may be able to provide the necessary water for a few months, assuming nothing happens to it. Jeff Brumfield, NPR News.
Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is set to launch his second run for president tonight in New Hampshire. Josh Rogers from New Hampshire Public Radio reports Christie is expected to emphasize the need for Republicans to reject former President Donald Trump.
Christie endorsed Donald Trump after he dropped out of the 2016 campaign following a poor finish here in New Hampshire. Christie went on to lead Trump's transition team, but later became an outspoken critic, particularly after Trump refused to accept his loss to Joe Biden. Christie's positioning himself as the lone GOP candidate willing to aggressively take on the former president. Christie's entrance into the race for the Republican nomination comes a day after New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, another Trump supporter turned critic, decided against joining the fray. Among other things, Sununu cited a concern that a large Republican field of candidates would end up helping Trump win. For NPR News, I'm Josh Rogers in Concord.
In a move that's shaking up the world of men's professional golf, the PGA Tour has agreed to merge with its Saudi-backed rival, LIV Golf. NPR's Emily Olson reports the merger will end all pending litigation between the two leagues.
The PGA Tour had long been the dominant force in professional golf. That changed last year when a new league, bankrolled by the Saudi Crown Prince, lured away some of the best players with millions in contracts and prize funds. The two groups traded lawsuits and bitter accusations, which some fans said distracted from the game as a whole. In a surprise announcement on Tuesday, the rival leagues said they had agreed to merge alongside the European DP World Tour. The three-way agreement creates one collectively owned for-profit group that will aim to grow the game on a global scale. Emily Olson, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly has appointed Ryan Sherritt to fill its vacant seat. Assembly members took a roll call vote at Thursday's regular meeting. Sherritt was voted in on a 4-1 vote with one assembly member absent. Sherritt's appointment comes after several months of reshuffling within the Borough Assembly. Former Borough Mayor Amy Williams was selected to fill the Borough Manager's position earlier this spring, leaving the Borough Mayor position vacant. And serving Assembly Member Scott Arndt was appointed to fill the Borough Mayor's role, leaving an Assembly seat open. Sherritt's appointment to fill the seat means the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will have no vacancies for the first time since the fall. He was sworn in immediately after Thursday's vote. His tenure in office officially started on Friday. Nearly 70 passengers were evacuated from a small cruise ship in Glacier Bay National Park on Monday morning. An engine room fire disabled the Wilderness Discoverer, a ship from the Juneau-based tour company Uncruise Adventures. Petty Officer Ian Gray said fire was reported to the U.S. Coast Guard around 7:30 a.m.
By the time we got there, they had put the fire out, and then the passengers were taken off and were in good health.
Crew members on the Wilderness Discoverer radioed for assistance from nearby vessels. The Sapphire Princess responded and used one of its lifeboats to bring over passengers and most of the crew from the damaged boat. The Wilderness Discoverer will be towed to a shipyard in Ketchikan, where local and federal authorities will work to determine the cause of the fire. The evacuated passengers were picked up by a different uncruised ship and returned to the company's headquarters in Juneau on Monday afternoon. Company representatives said all of them will get full refunds. During most of May, red dresses and other red clothing hung from trees around Ward Lake near Ketchikan. They were symbols of missing and murdered indigenous people from southern southeast Alaska. But as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, almost 50 of them disappeared, and some have turned up buried or near pipes around the trail.
Dozens of red clothes, some trailing adult-sized gowns, some child-sized frilly frocks, swayed from trees all around Ward Lake in May. They're a tangible reminder of real lives lost, each one representing Indigenous people who were murdered or are still missing. But then, most of them disappeared before they were due to be taken down.
It's just disrespectful.
Michael Toole is the Victim Services Program Coordinator for the local tribe, Ketchikan Indian Community.
That's a terrible way to discount the reality of the lives of some of these people who are missing relatives who haven't received justice.
Toole says he checked on the dresses in mid-May. The tribe held a permit to hang the dresses through the end of the month. That's according to a U.S. Forest Service spokesperson.
And there had been some that were, weathered. I mean, the weather was off and on, mixed bag with rain and wind, and some were tattered, but certainly none that I recall being missing.
There were 60 garments hung as part of the installation. When staff went back to take them down late last month, most of them were gone. The tribe checked in with Alaska State Troopers and the Forest Service, but they didn't know what had happened to the dresses. There was outcry on social media. The tribe's council issued a statement condemning what they called, quote, a hurtful and disrespectful act that undermines the efforts to bring understanding and raise awareness about the MMIP epidemic. They asked anyone with information to contact local law enforcement, but also to contact the tribe and learn more about the epidemic. Some of the dresses have started to turn up in the past few days. Pictures of wet, crumpled dresses appeared on social media.
A number of these dresses had been collected and discarded off the trail and covered up next to a culvert there.
Gloria Burns is Ketchikan Indian Community's vice president and the chair of the Social Services Committee.
They've been found in the lake vicinity, just, you know, back, almost like they were stuffed into the drain pipe.
Burns says the act left her with a deep feeling of sorrow. She says it felt like a, quote, intentional, almost vicious attack. Burns says that the tribe staff hung the dresses with remembrance and intention, trying to make it what she called a safe space.
And so when you're going through that process of trying to create a safe space, and then it's intentionally made unsafe, it feels very much like a violation. And I think, you know, the hard part is that missing and murdered indigenous people has been happening since colonization. We really don't talk about it. You know, we haven't really spoke those, you know, to the outside community.
The Tribal Council encourages all Ketchikan residents to reach out to Ketchikan Indian community and learn more about the MMIP crisis. Burns also hopes that whoever removed the clothing talks to someone and tries to understand why they did it. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The Alaska State Commission for Human Rights has scheduled a public hearing for a human rights complaint regarding the use of tribal IDs. The complaint relates to a 2020 incident when a sign posted at Juneau's Fred Meyer stated that tribal IDs would not be accepted for tobacco and alcohol sales. Jamie Ann Sithathan Hasselquist filed the complaint after an elder called her and told her about the signs.
He was really shook up and said that it reminded him of those days when signs were posted.
She said the elder was referring to the period before Alaska passed the Anti-Discrimination Act of 1945, when Juneau businesses would post signs that said things like, "No natives allowed," "No dogs, no natives," and "We cater to white trade only." City and Borough of Juneau Assembly member Wahijidok Barbara Blake said that tribal IDs should be valid for any purpose that any other government-issued identification can be used for.
People don't understand that the tribes are a sovereign entity, that they actually have governing authority within the state of Alaska and within the United States of America, that their inherent authority predates the United States of America, predates the state of Alaska, or any constitution for the state or for the United States of America.
Fred Meyer eventually took the signs down, but Hasselquist said Fred Meyer's action caused harm to the community, so she submitted a complaint to the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights. She says she wants to make sure that Fred Meyer will offer education and training to make sure this won't happen again.
And they have to integrate civil rights and anti-discrimination into their policy to teach their employees that that is not okay to hang signs like that, that it's discrimination.
She wants that education to include Alaskan Native civil rights advocate Elizabeth Perachevich and the history of Alaska's own anti-discrimination movements. The Central Council of Thlinkit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska issue IDs for tribal members. Their website lays out what the cards can be used for and gives advice for what people should do if their ID is rejected. The State Office of Administrative Hearings has scheduled the hearing for October 9th. Neither Fred Meyer nor its parent company, Kroger, responded to requests for comment. Another Alaska-based wildfire crew is headed to Canada. Bureau of Land Management Alaska Fire Service spokesperson Beth Ibsen says the Midnight Sun Hotshot crew left Sunday for the National Interagency Fire Center in Boise, Idaho,
where they will get their gear together and their vehicles and drive up to Edmonton, Alberta.
The AFS group follows the Alaska Division of Forestry Pioneer Peak Hotshots, who deployed to Alberta last month. Ibsen says Lower 48-based crews are also helping out in Canada, where an unprecedented early wildfire season continues.
There have been more than 2,000 wildfires that have burned 9.3 million acres across Canada.
The CBC reported Monday that this year's numbers compare with a 10-year average at this point in the season of 1,600 fires and 628,000 acres burned. Fires are currently active from British Columbia on the west coast to Nova Scotia on the east coast. Meanwhile, Ibsen says the Alaska and Lower 48 fire seasons are off to a slower start.
Nationally, the number of acres burned is below the 10-year average.
Ibsen says Alaska had only one staffed fire as of Monday.
10-acre fire that's on the Yukon River, about 4 miles west of Stephen Village, that smoke jumpers think that they're going to have wrapped up in a couple of days and demobilize.
Ibsen stresses that Alaska has crews and aircraft ready if the fire season here takes off. Progress is being made in Fairbanks on what will be Alaska's first off-road vehicle park. The privately run park going in on public land along the Tanana River in South Fairbanks will be focused on fun and safety. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Fairbanks Off-Road Lions Club is developing the park on about 200 acres leased from the Fairbanks North Star Borough east of the Tanana Lakes Recreation Area. Off-Road Lions Club President Corey Bellows has been leading the project since being approached by the borough about it more than a decade ago.
It's going to be awesome, but it isn't going to be overnight.
The project is drawn out because of a complicated leasing arrangement involving the state and the borough, as well as right-of-way issues. But in the meantime, Bellows says his small club has cleaned up the site of junk vehicles and other trash and roughed in about 20 miles of trails.
There'll be trails out here that are just cruiser trails. There'll be trails out here that your buddy's going to sit next to you and say, hey, you really want to go through that again?
Bouncing along in his Jeep, Bellows lays out the plan for additional development.
We're going to put in a parking area, a vendor area. There will be a mud pit, a mud course, a rock garden. I'm going to try to scrounge up enough material to make a nasty little hill climb for what you can in a river bottom. And I'm going to put obstacles within the hill, and I'm going to call it the Porcupine. It's going to be a fun park. It's in town. Every age and skill level will have something out here for them.
Bellows says the park, which will also include a lakeside campground, will be open to the public for a fee 1 weekend a month during the summer.
And then it'll be available throughout the winter upon request. And that's how we'll do fundraising for maintenance for the club.
He says the club managed, insured, and maintained park will be a venue for events from rallies and competitions to off-road education and training for kids and adults.
Show the guy that's learning or not doing it the right way, hey, there's a better way.
Bellows emphasizes that the park will provide a place for fun, safe, and responsible off-roading, but he acknowledges some opposition.
They think that we're here destroying things and how unfortunate, and we're loud and rowdy and obnoxious. And I've asked them, have you ever been around these things or experienced this? Well, no. Well, then how would you know what that's like? I would like to invite you to come out when we get an opening, and I will personally take you out for a ride and show you what it's about.
Bellows says the Off-Road Lions are hoping to open the park for its first public event next spring. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Anna Ehlers is now Dr. Anna Ehlers, an honor bestowed upon her this spring by the University of Alaska Southeast. She says it's one event in a series of many that help her do what she loves most, which is keep Chilkat weaving alive. The Juno elder says recognition from the doctorate is already helping her secure future projects. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, she's working on her biggest blanket yet.
Anna Ehlers' love affair with Thlinkit weaving began in downtown Juneau as a small child when she saw her uncle in a July 4th parade wearing a Chilkat blanket with fringe that seemed to have a life of its own.
The fringe was very flowing and graceful. The colors and the design, my little four-year-old eyes just fell in love with it, and I knew that's what I wanted to do with my life, was to make those.
It wasn't until 20 years later that she shared her dream with a state lawmaker while working at the state capitol. When Ehlers explained she would have to take a year off from work to learn to weave, something she couldn't afford to do, a group of Alaska Native lawmakers got together and wrote a bill to give her a grant equivalent to a year's salary. Governor Jay Hammond signed it into law just in time for Ehlers to work under Jenny Clunott, then in her 90s, and a master at using mountain goat wool and cedar bark fibers to weave, knowledge that is precious because it was almost lost.
Jenny Clunott said we were not to be stingy with the knowledge that she gave us.
Advice Ehlers took to heart. She went on to teach and mentor more than 300 weavers. She also donated a lot of her work, pieces that typically take a year or more to weave. But Ehlers discovered that gifting her art turned out to be an act of personal healing, that when she shares it with others, she says pain in her wrists from carpal tunnel syndrome mysteriously disappears. And it was in this spirit of generosity that Ehlers was recognized at the University of Southeast Alaska during its graduation ceremony this year.
I am honored to present Anna Ehlers with the Honorary Doctorate of Fine Arts. Congratulations, Dr. Ehlers.
Thank you.
Dr. Ehlers gives credit for her new degree to her uncle Roy Brown. She says the memory of how he wore his regalia with such dignity in that 1959 parade continues to inspire her today. Ehlers also thanked all the people and organizations that have awarded her fellowships and grants over the years to help keep Chilkat weaving and its designs, which reflect the identity of clan and tribe, alive. But at 68, she's not done yet and says she's begun work on the blanket of her dreams.
The project I'm doing is the biggest Chilkat blanket in the world.
The design is top secret until it goes on a national tour in December 2025. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
I'm Samantha Fields with the Marketplace Minute. The Securities and Exchange Commission filed suit today against crypto trading platform Coinbase for operating illegally and not registering with regulators. This comes just one day after the SEC sued Binance, another crypto trading platform, for similar reasons. Dock workers on the West Coast have slowed or stopped work at several major ports over the last few days. And now, major retail and manufacturing groups are asking the White House to get involved in negotiations between the dock workers' union and their employers. More than 22,000 dock workers are pushing for better pay. They've been without a contract since last summer. Members of the Hollywood Actors Union, SAG-AFTRA, have voted to authorize a strike if they can't agree on a new contract with major production and streaming companies by the end of June. I'm Samantha Fields with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the sixth day of June, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:13. It won't set again until 11:04, giving us 17 hours and 51 minutes of glorious daylight. A gain of 2 minutes and 9 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low temperature for this date was 34 degrees set in 2002, and our record high was 70 degrees set in 1922, 1980, and 1990. Currently 46 degrees under a light rain, fog, mist, all seems to be coexisting. Out at the airport, they are showing east winds at 13 miles per hour, 96% humidity, and they are back down to 1/4 mile of visibility. Look for rain for the rest of the afternoon, and it's likely tonight too, at least until 1 a.m. or so. And then it's going to start up again tomorrow, going into showers. Rain is pretty likely until Sunday or so. Let's face it, until Monday. High near 49 today with a southeast wind around 15. Overnight low about 45 with east winds to 10. Tomorrow they'll turn to the northeast and stay at about 10. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon at 5:14 p.m. That will be a 6.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:14 of 2.6 feet here on the east side. We do have another minus tide in the morning. That will happen at 11:22 a.m. tomorrow morning and be minus 1.2 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:27 this afternoon and be 12.4 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:59 p.m., let's call it 11, of 3.9 feet. And your low tide tomorrow morning will be at 11:48 a.m., almost noon, and be minus 2.7 feet in Larsen Bay. Well, let's check in with the very first advisory message from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 1, date issued June 6th at 10 a.m. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Sunday, June 11th, in the following areas, in the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 10th, in the following areas, in the Anton Larson Bay, Sheraton Bay, Kujuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spearden Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Friday, June 9th, and remain open until further notice. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Iziwit Bay sections of the Afognak District, and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Friday, June 9th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters will be reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And so it begins. Fishermen, here's your marine weather for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for today, east winds to 20 knots and seas to 8 feet, coming down to 7 feet tonight. For tomorrow, northeast 20, seas to 7 feet. And for Thursday through Saturday, southeast 15, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow, east 20 and seas to 5 feet today, northeast 25 and seas to 5 feet tonight, and northeast 25, seas to 6 feet tomorrow. For Wednesday night, they are expecting northeast 25, seas to 7 feet, and Thursday through Saturday on our west side, east winds to 15 knots, seas to 5 feet. The Kodiak Public Library Association's Board of Directors will be meeting tonight in the Public Library's multipurpose room at 5:30. The public is welcome to attend. The agenda will be posted on the website, which is at kpla.us. And they're going to talk about the recent book sale. Here are some upcoming meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough. Tonight, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. And on Thursday, the Assembly will be having a special meeting followed by a work session. That's happening in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office with any questions at 907-486-9310. Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. You can subscribe if you want to get live stream notifications. Things are happening at the library, including their most recent summer reading challenge. The theme is Find Your Voice. Sign up now and begin logging your minutes that you read and write book reviews, participate in activities to complete the challenge. It runs through August 30th. You can sign up at kodiak.beanstack.org. or stop by the library and sign up in person. The library's escape room is open for the summer. Daily time slots are available except for Mondays. Call now to check availability and reserve your spot. It's open to all ages, but children under 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Groups of four are recommended. Call the library at 907-486-8686 to reserve your spot. And something special going on Saturday at 1 p.m., join local musician Elamy Tiller for some songwriting at the library. This program offers a creative and inspiring platform to learn the craft of telling your story through music. It's for ages 14 and above. Call the library once again at 907-486-8686. And finally, Kodiak High School class of 1973, you are having your, 50-year reunion. They're having a dinner on September 2nd, and they'd like to gather all of the class of 1973 people together. If you know somebody who's in that class, call Janelle at 425-879-7067 or Terry at 907-654-7713.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.